Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jay is sat with his head in his hands. You're right, JB.
I was reading my tablet.
You're reading some of the messages that we've received on the Egg Chasers account this last week. Is that what you're reading? Is that why your head's in your hands?
No. Just a hard day training, Tim. Hard day training.
All right, come on then. Hands in. Pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Here we go then. There's four games in this Rugby World Cup left. There's week two of the Aviva Premiership on the way, and there's so much been happening in the world of rugby. Let's get into another Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. But before I do, just to remind you, you can listen on iTunes. Just search Egg Chasers and you'll find us. You can also listen on the Acast app. I recommend downloading that and listening on that. And if you subscribe on iTunes, we'll get every episode delivered straight to you. And it's at Rugby Podcast on Twitter if you want to get in touch with us. And Tim Tam Timmy on Twitter, just to kick us off, boys, he says, here's a fact for you lads. He knows how much we like a fact, particularly Phil loves a fact. Mm-hmm. He says, boys, here's a fact for you. There is actually a playoff at this Rugby World Cup for the fifth place. It's called the Six Nations.
Hooray!
Wait for it.
Absolute banter flying around already. Lads.
Hey, James Haskell and Sam Burgess, Cowhead, and Hask, that you just heard a clip of there, they're going to be facing off together potentially in the Premiership.
Man on man.
That is some of the Premiership chat we've got. But we obviously got to start with the World Cup semi-finals.
Is it sour grapes, or does everyone else just feel deflated now? Semi-finals have come, I should be really excited, but I do feel I'm struggling to get up for it. I really am.
Really? Because I am. Maybe it's because you've only just had Wales go out and we've had like 3 weeks to get England.
I feel worse for Scotland. Truth be told, I don't know. And also all the awful headlines. I mean, on the BBC today, there was a headline, is European rugby dead? Or is this the death of European rugby? No, it's not.
We're just out
of the competition. That's it.
Oh, I am very excited for this weekend. I think these are the best matchups. I think this is the best combination to get the best games.
I hope we don't get rubbish weather. The forecast is a bit mixed. One of the great things has been, it's been really unusually clement weather. We haven't had a single, really, during the World Cup and during any game, we haven't had a horrible day's rain or anything.
Apart from the end of the Scotland-Australia game.
Yes.
When the Scottish fans were cheering the rain.
Yeah, that was the only time I can think. I feel a bit weird not having midweek rugby after like 4 weeks of... Almost every day there's a rugby game.
Well, if World Rugby would listen to our plea, and our plea, which so there are people in the world of rugby, and none of us, we've all played at various levels. Phil played up to championship level. I played League One level. I never really played championship. So I played League One, third tier. Phil got up to the second tier. JB's got to like fifth or sixth tier.
If that.
Well, which is fine. Well, that's fine. That's the point. None of us are ex-players. But if we were, then what we could make so much money from the things we say on this podcast. Because what it seems like is that a lot of other people who were ex-players listen to the podcast, write what we say,
I think that's
and get paid
for it. Scandalous
accusation.
Well, I'd be very careful knowing the nature of some of the people who might say some of the things that we might have said.
One of them is a solicitor.
Ex-solicitors or current solicitors, practicing solicitors. Yeah,
he should mention that more.
Anyway, there is a well-known ex-rugby player who may have written an article basically verbatim saying what we've been saying for ages.
Don't worry about it, Tim.
Anyway, what we said, and if World Rugby listened to our plea for the lower teams to still have at the third place or even fourth and even fifth place teams to have games beyond the group stages in a plate or a trophy or a shield competition, then we would have midweek rugby.
We would do.
Is that how, when you play it? Because that's quite a good idea, isn't it? Yeah. Smaller grounds midweek.
Yeah, smaller grounds, like cheaper entry fees.
Yeah. That'd be amazing. So like, you might get England this week playing at AJ Bell.
Against Japan.
Oh, no, not Japan.
Not Japan. Please, anyone but Japan.
Yeah, I wouldn't fancy Japan.
But no, they haven't listened to us. But various other ex-professionals, for example, I'm just going to pick a name out of random.
Now, Tim,
Let's say Brian Moore.
Hypothetically,
bright men come to the same conclusions. You and Brian Moore are just on the same intellectual level. That's all it is.
Okay, all right, whatever. let's get into the semi-finals then. Here we go. So, Argentina, Australia. I hope this is Argentina have the same attacking intent that they've shown so far.
I think they will do. They've shown they kind of only have one way of playing. Even the first game against New Zealand, admittedly they only scored 16 points, but they didn't particularly change the way that they played. They played free-flowing rugby. They still used Hernandez and Sanchez to get field position, but then when they had clean ball in the right parts of the pitch, they played rugby and they used that dangerous back three. So I don't think they'll change. I can't remember.
Conversely, when you look at England and you say maybe England shied away from picking some of the young, bright, fearless guys like Henry Slade, for example, they're picking like Cortada. Cortada, that's the type of coffee, isn't it?
Is it?
I don't know.
I think
Kenko.
Cortado is
Santiago Kenko.
What's his name?
Santiago Cordero.
Cordero, that's it. He's 21. He just looks like fearless.
Both the second rows are like 21.
Yeah, I know.
They're both very young.
But aside, I just think fear's not in it. I
know.
They've got an amazing national anthem. They've got amazing stash. I mean, that, everything is in their favour.
They've got
before the game
one of the best front rows in the world. Creevy and Ayerza are absolutely exceptional. They would get into just about any other team's front row.
They're all very, very good. We talk about the young lads, but the experience in there. I mean, Hernandez, for instance, doesn't have many caps. But his experience...
Fernandez Lobbe.
Yeah,
Fernandez Lobbe.
What a guy.
Sorry, Hernandez is one I remember to say.
Hernandez, yeah.
I mean, he's got like 50 caps. He's been to Racing. He's been to Toulon. He's been to Stade. He was probably man of the tournament two tournaments ago.
Yeah, 2007.
Now he's back. So there's a real nice mix.
Agreed. Now, I think this is actually, the game is going to come more down to the Australian selection and whether they can select Pocock and Hooper together.
Yeah, that's massive.
And also whether they can select Folau.
On fitness grounds, do you mean?
On fitness grounds. This is purely on fitness grounds. So, as things stand, today, 22nd, the Thursday, those two plus Scott Seo were...
Scott Seo doesn't look good. I mean, I don't know what the official reason is, but it did not look good when he's holding his shoulder.
It didn't in the game, but he was the one today who actually had most involvement in training.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently Pocock never got off the stationary bike. Folau did 10 minutes of running before breaking down and having to ice his ankle. And Scott Seo took part in most of the morning session and then
You want to see these guys in this game.
Not if you're Argentine.
No one.
Yeah.
Quite.
Depends who you're supporting. But the big one for me is Pocock. I think Kirtley Beale can fill in adequately. He's not Folau, but he can fill in more than adequately at fullback. But the flexibility and the freedom that having Pocock and Hooper... and the ability to speed up your own ball while simultaneously slowing down the opposition ball. Yeah. Both ways, it makes a massive difference.
And I think Argentina are conspicuous in not having an out-and-out seven.
Matera
is a big ball carrier. And
he's good around the breakdown. But one of the points that's been made about England is England don't necessarily need an out-and-out seven if the team as a whole takes responsibility for the ball at the breakdown. And it doesn't matter who cleans out, but the first man there, be it the winger, the centre, the tight head prop, they clean out fast and efficiently.
Do you know another way that you take away that necessity in the same way is if you do what Argentina do and you run at space and you offload? Because if you run at space and you offload... then you inevitably will get someone over the game line a bit more, and then it's so much easier to ruck.
Yeah.
Instead of what England do, and to an extent what Wales
and Ireland
do to an extent, and France, is you pop it out predictably, Bosch, try and just run into your opposite number.
One-out runners,
and that's going to breed slow ball. So I think it's the mentality more so than the personnel, I think. You picked up on, Argentina have got some quality players. Which Argentinians would make the Australian 15?
Would Ayrton to come ahead of Scott Seo?
Yes.
In my opinion, yes, he would.
Potentially all three.
I'd probably go two Argentinians, Ayrton and Creevy, with then Kepu.
Yeah.
I think the form he's shown, and he's been the cornerstone of that Australian scrum.
I would probably disagree and say probably more. And
more ahead of Creevy?
Yeah, I think so.
Creevy for the past, in the Rugby Championship for the past 4 years, three years has been...
Sorry, Rugby Championship is in the one which Worcester played in, or the other one?
Well, both, because he was competing in both.
Exactly.
It's astonishing that arguably the best hooker in the world was playing in the Green King IPA Rugby Championship.
Exactly. I mean, the reason I give him is just, you know, he is the Australian captain, leader, and he's there for a good reason, and he's a damn good player too.
He is a good player. They're both.
Is he not Argentinian captain?
He is. Creevy is Argentinian captain as well.
He is. Good point. Yeah. There you go.
So any other forwards like Fernandez Lobbe with Pooper? Would that be?
I like that.
I love that as a back row.
I think that would be very good. Just swap Fernandez Lobbe for. Now the only question would be. Because Scott Fardy is supposed to do all of the unseen work.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
Fernandez Lobby.
Show pony.
He's not a show pony. He's not a world class back
show pony. Oh, okay. Show pony, what a show pony. A thoroughbred. He's a thoroughbred.
Thoroughbred show pony. Yeah, let's put Fernandez Lobby with Pooper.
Yeah, done. And then would any back, Imhoff maybe, would he be the only back that would get into that Australian back line?
Adam Ashley Hooper? Because you'd have to drop.
Yeah, you'd have to drop.
Or Rob Horn.
I'd have
How about Hernandez?
Honourable mention for Nicolas Sanchez, but I probably would have Foley ahead of him. So yeah, just him off.
So what's your scenario for Argentina winning this?
Pocock doesn't play.
Okay.
Yeah. Argentina continually get across the game line, get fast ball,
and pick up about 12 points in scrum pens.
Yeah,
That would work nicely. I'd go with that.
Scrum pens, definitely.
And then you kick from all sorts of crazy angles.
Get in field territory. Mm. Another thing, Argentina got one of the best rolling mauls in world rugby. They scored two tries against New Zealand in the Rugby Championship using the rolling maul. And if they get penalties, well, anywhere, either kick sticks or kick and use their rolling maul.
How about a couple of front row yellow cards for
Australia? Yeah, we'll have that.
Well, the problem with that is it could take it to uncontested scrums.
There's two semi-finals. I think we should get on to semi-final number two.
There's another one.
There is.
Okay, go on.
So the winner of Argentina-Australia will face, of course, New Zealand versus South Africa.
Has there ever been a less fancied South African team? Because that's how I feel. I think it feels to me, and please feel free to disagree, that this All Blacks team is like a steamroller going forward, and I just can't see anyone stopping it.
What were you saying a couple of weeks ago? I think this All Black team are there to be taken.
Yeah,
they're
not really. But then they do that. So, I mean, all you can go on is the information which is shown. And if you look.
Yeah, but you can't just go from the, oh, I'm not so sure about them, to a steamroller.
Well, you can, because.
Well, yeah, you can.
No, but okay. Explain. If you look at the All Blacks team who went against Georgia. And the handling errors were many.
Two different games. That's like going, oh, Australia. Oh, I'm not sure about them now because Scotland pushed them close. I don't think they're a very good team anymore.
The reason I said that I thought they could be there for the taking is because against Georgia, of all teams, they looked a little frail with knock-ons and handling errors. But then how do you question that performance against France? To be fair, if I rewound the scenario of the France New Zealand game, and you said, how would you see us going? I'd have picked the same way again, which is New Zealand to win after a hard grind.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say the same about South Africa, but because I'm going to say the same about South Africa mentally, I'm now going to change that purposely and say it's going to be an absolute battering by New Zealand, although I hope it's not.
Really?
That's what I just don't know. I genuinely don't know.
I think, when I look at South Africa, the one thing I think they've got that matches New Zealand is the number of caps on the field. They've got a lot of Centurion guys in and around the squad, and they've got still got World Cup winners around them. So they're not going to be overawed by the occasion. They're going to take it head on, and I think probably much like Argentina lived with New Zealand for 60 minutes. It's the position they're in after an hour, and what they've got left in the tank.
Yes, I think that'll be very important.
How do you beat New Zealand? I mean, the only thing I can really think of is you start them with the ball completely, indefinitely.
You have to do that, but in order to do that, you've got your kicking game has to be so immaculate, because New Zealand are good enough to defend with 12 men as a flat line with three men in the boot, and they're fit enough, their positioning is good enough to defend as a flat line with 12, three men in the boot. So if your kick isn't perfectly spot on, it's getting run back at pace and 40 yards further downfield.
I don't know how South Africa win this.
I think they win it by keeping it very tight, not starving them of ball. Just play phase after phase after phase, and then a very, very well executed kick. You have to find grass every time, and you have to kick chase.
How did England in New Zealand almost, well, challenge New Zealand? Like, actually gave them a really good go. And that was
was quite a lot of attacking rugby.
That was by a really solid platform, having a go when you get the chance.
Of course, yes, when the time is right, though.
When England won their last time, I don't know if you remember this, but they had a driving Morven belt halfway to the 22. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
My thoughts on New Zealand remain the same before the tournament. They've got some players who are peaking at the perfect time, some players who are slightly declining, but the overall team, the overall output, is still comfortably the best team in the world. They will beat every team in the world more often than not, and it's if you catch them on an off day with the right team, like Australia did in the Rugby Championship.
Well, same question with Argentina into Australia. Which South Africans, if you were Steve Hansen and you could, you know, just transplant a South African for a Kiwi, who which of them would get into that 15?
I'd definitely have Beast. Not necessarily on
really?
Form. Well, New Zealand are down to their third choice, Loosehead.
That's why they've got Cole Moody playing.
Yes. Yeah. So definitely have Beast in there. Yeah. I'd probably have Dane Coles and...
Bismarck hasn't had his best World Cup, has he?
No, he's struggling a little bit with injury as well.
How about Etzebeth? Just because A, I love saying his name, and B, I love watching his highlights.
I'd probably... Those four second rows are all exceptional. I'd probably just pick any... I'd just... Names out of a hat. One from New Zealand, one from South Africa. It doesn't really matter which one.
Etzebeth and Ritalik, then.
Yeah, no. I'd probably go for those two, but... I'd be happy with Whitelock and Lou Diego as well.
Yeah, you would be, wouldn't you? In fact, Whitelock's exceptional.
Back row, you've got the two best number eights in the world facing off together.
Yes.
Kieran Reid probably gets the edge on that one.
2 years ago, Kieran Reid was the best. That's probably the best season I've ever seen a player have. Last year, Vermeulen. however you say it, he was absolutely exceptional. But he's only just coming back from injury, so
it's like having
go Kieran Reid as things stand.
It's like having two top trump cards, which have got a mixture of nines and tens in their things. It's just like which nines and tens match up well.
Well, would Francois Lowe get in ahead of Kano?
It's very tough. I would have McCord for his all-round captaincy.
Yeah, and do you know what Kano does for them? He adds, because if you think about McCord, he does McCord stuff. So I don't need to describe to you what he does.
He does everything.
Reid, very, very smooth operator, but Kano is a blunt instrument.
Yeah.
And he gives him that real edge where you don't really get that from the other two. So he's actually more important, say, than if you brought in a Francois Lowe into that All Blacks back row.
I'm going to put it out there. I think Beast because of injury.
Yeah.
Etzebeth probably, although it's a coin toss.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it out there. I don't think a single South African gets in that 15 other than those.
I would definitely Furry Dupree. Jay.
What is that?
I've got no idea. I've literally got no idea. What is that?
Jay, you've got three devices in front of you, haven't you?
Anyway, whatever. No anyway, you were saying.
Anyway, the backs, I'd have Aaron Smith. Furry Dupree is excellent.
But he's definitely but Aaron Smith. Oh, he's next level.
Best nine in the world.
Oh, yeah. But yeah.
Dan Carter looks like he's back to his best.
Metronomic.
The argument would be whether you'd combine Mar Nonu with Jesse Creel, the young and the experience.
Well, let's just go with no, because...
100 caps and World Cup winner and absolute... I mean, Mar Nonu, isn't it?
If you... Oh, no, I'd definitely have Nonu.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then would you have Creel ahead of Conrad?
No.
Nope. Probably
no.
Not.
No, no, no.
Or Fekitoa.
I definitely have Surveyor, 100%.
Yeah, definitely.
Surveyor's
I suppose Willie LaRue, Ben Smith. I'd have Ben Smith. Ben Smith.
Definitely have Ben Smith.
I'd have Ben Smith
Habana for his experience, because he's still very good.
Maybe Habana. Yeah. Yeah, all right.
You know, it's been mentioned a couple of times this week. I've seen on Twitter the Surveyor and Lomu fact.
The fact that you've brought up many times, Phil.
Yeah, I have mentioned it before.
This is ages ago. It's a very timely fact to bring up.
That neither of them, so between the two of them, they scored 75, something like that, tries. Mm-hmm. And neither of them has ever scored against South Africa.
Now that is a fact.
That is a hell of a fact.
Wow.
So 75 tries, and they both played South Africa
numerous times.
Combined more than 100 caps, and they will have played at least, I don't know, 12, 15 games between the two of them, maybe even 20 games against South Africa. Never scored.
Do you imagine Surveyor's going to... I reckon Surveyor's going to be back to his best, i.e. walking tries over in a casual manner.
Just not...
Yeah, not having to try. I mean, he's completely tried once in about 5 years now against France.
Well, if we're saying maybe Habana for his experience, and if we're saying Etzebeth, although it's a coin toss, and Beast because New Zealand have injuries, we're basically saying there is no South African that you would go, get them in that team. Ahead of a Kiwi.
There's no clear cut.
Which means that South Africa are going to have to be. I mean, I know there's like styles of play is important and tactics and all the rest of it, but South Africa are going to have to be better than the sum of their parts.
I think if you can get that scrum creaking, like we saw Georgia do, like we saw Tonga do.
Yeah, right.
And the driving maul, if you can do that and put pressure on them and starve them of ball.
What are you saying, Australia, New Zealand? It's hard to look past that, isn't it?
I'm gonna reserve judgment until I know if Pocock's playing. Do
you really think it's gonna make that much of a difference?
I actually do. I actually think he could. The best games that I've seen Australia play, when they hammered England, when they beat New Zealand in the Rugby Championship, they had both of them playing. When they've not, they lost to New Zealand just after that. They were not great against Wales. They obviously weren't great against Scotland. They weren't up to their best. I think it makes a huge difference. If Pocock is unavailable, lump on Argentina.
Ooh.
Nice, I like that.
Go on, Tim.
Interestingly, Toby Flood in the Metro today. Did anyone see his article?
Did I read Toby Flood in the Metro? I definitely didn't do that.
Toby Flood's, bearing in mind, says that the difference and the secret to Southern Hemisphere success is the culture.
He's probably right, because they don't focus on culture.
There's been more articles in the press over the past 2 weeks about culture than I've ever seen. There are more articles than even Stuart Lancaster.
Yeah,
I refer you to my earlier point about journalists and people and ex-players making money out of writing what people on this podcast say.
I stopped talking about culture at the start of the World Cup purely for the fact that people were getting bored of it.
Yeah, I'm so bored of culture.
I'm bored. I don't want to hear any more about culture, please.
Right, I'll tell you what. Before we move on to the Premiership, there is an element of rugby that we need to talk about in relation to the World Cup. And here's a question from M. Lindsay, UK, who says, after World Rugby's statement, does that mean we're now going to get post-mortems on every refereeing decision? Surely that's not good for the sport. This is in light of World Rugby releasing a statement following the quarterfinal and the controversial 78th minute decision by referee Craig Joubert, which saw Scotland exit the competition after Bernard Foley knocked over a penalty that, with all the information in front of us and all the views, turns out it wasn't a penalty.
Well, I'll lead off on this and I'll say that I have no problem with openness whatsoever. So if they want to go back and review the games and say, this is wrong, and this is wrong, I have no problems with that whatsoever.
I think they do that as a matter of course.
They do that with every game.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they've released it there.
Yeah, they don't release it. Yeah. They don't release a statement on it.
Yeah, so for instance, Nigel Owens has got it in his contract that he's not even allowed to talk about other match officials or, you know, any such thing. So the officials aren't allowed to talk about it. I have no problem with it because I think it improves the standard of officiating overall. Here's what I do have a problem with, and it's not quite the question that you asked, but I'm really disliking the vilification of Craig Joubert. I'm really disliking it.
By who?
Mostly by the press, but I don't think there's enough of the rugby community standing up for him and saying he might have just made a mistake. Even the running off the field, I think, in some ways can be explained.
Where have you been the last couple of days? Because ever since World Rugby released that statement, I think all I've actually read or seen or heard are people saying World Rugby are bang out of order. I can't believe they did that. They've thrown, and the phrase thrown Craig Joubert under a bus.
I don't think
they've hung him out to dry.
I think that's a nonsense.
They've set a dangerous precedent. Well, no, these are phrases that I think this is the predominant line of thinking in the light of the statement.
It really does. There's a lot of people criticising World Rugby for coming.
See, I think that's not. I don't think these two things need to be hand in hand. Just because you've said he's made a mistake. I mean, rugby's a game which is so complex. It does bring out the fallibility in individuals. And that's what's happened to Craig Joubert. On the other hand, there's absolutely nothing wrong with saying the referee got this wrong, and this wrong. Nothing wrong at all. And I don't see what negative effect it would have.
Well,
so the referee...
well what people are saying is, because, I mean, I wouldn't say about every decision. And some people said, why have they taken the decision to do it now? Well, I kind of think, hold on a minute, this is the once every 4 years... It's the premier competition, and there's a very controversial call, and we've got a lot of new fans to rugby, and it's high stakes and a lot of media attention. And actually just clarifying the situation, and what World Rugby haven't said, and Phil, I think you've got the statement, haven't you? What World Rugby haven't done, which what you think from hearing some people talk about it, is that World Rugby have gone, we're really sorry about Craig Joubert. He completely messed it up.
Yeah.
What an idiot.
That is the way it comes across in the press.
When you read what people are saying about it, that's the sort of impression you get. Phil, why don't you tell us what they said?
They've basically just confirmed what the decision that was made and what the decision should have been. So they confirmed...
With the benefit... And they even say with the benefit of all the angles. And,
yeah. So they confirmed that he gave a penalty... With the benefit of all the angles, on reviewing it, it looks like Nick Phipps did intentionally try to touch the ball. He did touch the ball, therefore putting John Welsh onside. So it should have only been a scrum rather than the scrum for the knock-on rather than an offside for a penalty.
Yeah,
for
and they also go to some length to back him up and highlight his integrity and his professionalism and his skill.
They say that he was correct. Not to use a TMO because it's not a decision that can be referred to the TMO.
Yeah, clarify that because we were unsure on our last podcast.
And there's previous statements. There are old statements that from World Rugby, exactly the one that we read, which has now been superseded, but still exists.
That contradict it.
Yeah, so there's a more recent one that contradicts what we read the other day. So they clarified he shouldn't have used the TMO, but then they've stood up for him and supported him and said it is a difficult game. There's tough decisions. He is a very high-performing referee, and the standard of refereeing across all of the 44 games has been very good, which it has been. We've been talking about the rugby in most instances rather than the refereeing.
Yeah.
So have you changed your opinion then on Craig Joubert's disgraceful act of running off the field?
I still think he should not have run off the field.
I think he shouldn't have run off the field, but I kind of understand it. I mean, if he knows he's messed up one of the biggest games of his career... I just think, and you just want to get out of there.
I understand the feeling behind it, but then I also understand the feeling when you lose a game really painfully, so you just want to walk off. Yeah. But after the World Cup final, what will people be? What will the losing team be doing? Their dream will have ended. They've dreamt of lifting the World Cup, and they don't. Do they walk into the changing room and kick their... No, they stand there and they'll clap the opponents.
It's the way he ran off as well. Yeah. It was... He blew the final whistle and just
gone.
Ran,
just
off.
I think what he did is he realised, I've made the wrong decision, so I'm not going to officiate again at this World Cup, probably. So my only hope of appearing in the World Cup is to make a late claim for a place in the South Africa squad. So I need to demonstrate that I can play on the wing.
How old is he? He's about 38, 39.
Yeah.
About the right age.
Yeah.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, well, he is actually
younger than Victor Matfield, or same age.
Yeah, the only thing I'd put in his favour, and you make some really good points there, like you should shake hands, and the losing team probably will, is that the losing team have like 14 other teammates and a support staff, and being a referee is a fairly lonely place. So if you feel I mean, it must be an awful feeling.
I completely sympathise with the feelings. But anyway, but onto the world rugby thing, because like I say, I formed an opinion, and then when I was reading and I was hearing people talking about it, like they've thrown Craig Joubert under the bus, they've set a dangerous precedent. I was sitting there thinking, I feel like I'm a lone voice thinking actually that statement's all right, and I'm quite happy with it on this occasion. I don't think every single game needs a debrief and a statement.
No,
that is a justifiable argument to say, well, are you going to start apologising every time a referee gets it wrong?
They didn't apologise.
No.
They didn't apologise.
You're going to clarify.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Same. All amounts to the same thing.
Do you remember Pat Lamb with Leighton Hodges earlier on the season? Brings out his laptop and says, this is wrong. Did he get fined for that?
I can't remember.
No, on the subject of talking about it, like coaches talk, did you see Jose Mourinho, the way he talked about the referee the other day?
No, but I have seen a headline.
So he got a £50,000 fine for saying something like the referee was frightened, or referees are frightened to give us penalties. So that was questioning the integrity of an official. And he was saying, well, hold on a minute, Arsene Wenger criticises referees and you didn't fine him. One rule for one rule for someone else. And it turns out what Arsene Wenger said was the referee was weak and naive. And apparently that's not questioning his integrity, so that wasn't fined. So now, every time Chelsea play, Jose Mourinho is just going on after the game, what do you think of the penalty decision? I thought the referee was weak and naive. He's just saying that.
That's reminiscent of the Brendan Venter interview.
Cheers for Sorelli Bombo.
Weak and frightened.
Arsene Wenger said he was weak and naive.
Yeah, I get that bit.
Which isn't questioning the integrity, it's questioning the skill or the decision making. I think frightened was the word. Anyway, the point was, it was just you just talking about coaches talking about officials.
Pat Lamb was fined.
Oh, was he? Because that was actually pretty straight down the line. It was very technical. It wasn't offensive. It wasn't personal. He wasn't questioning integrity.
He was just saying, he's got this wrong. He's got this wrong. He's got this wrong. There's like three opportunities back to back to back, and all of them were the incorrect decision. It's just frustration, wasn't it?
The one thing I have heard someone say, which I kind of get on a principle level, and I heard an ex-referee, I forget which one, say that the referee makes a call and the referee is the...
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Adjudicator of fact on the field.
Yes. Well said.
Yeah.
I do get that it could be argued that World Rugby have undermined that.
Would anyone like to see rugby go back to a situation where the referee's interpretation of very vague laws ruled above all else? Because that's kind of what I'd like.
Well, that's when you're playing rugby, you're always told the referee is always right.
Exactly.
Because you don't have the benefit of the TMO or anything like that. Once he's made a decision, if you try and argue with him, you're only going to make it worse. You're only going to wind him up and get him against your team. So you just have to suck it up and get on with it. Referees do make mistakes.
I've told you this before, but after every game, I go up to the ref and I tell him what a great game he's had officiating, knowing that I'm going to see him again next week or like the week after. And they do actually appreciate it, even if they've had a horrible game. I'd like to see more referees' interpretation and a little bit more of a free-for-all. I don't like these cameras everywhere, like, oh, there's a fist to the face or whatever it may be. There should be a little bit more room for...
I would say everybody should listen back to Phil's comment at the end of that little segment, because I listened to that bit of the podcast, and when Phil said, the problem is, we've got all the... I like the mechanisms that are in place, still getting the wrong decisions and still making soft calls, that's it.
Mm. Yeah, that it is frustrating when you have everything available. You have all the technology at your fingertips to make the right decision every single time.
And Louis Picamoles still got a yellow card.
And there's still mistakes happening.
For sorting Richie McCaw out. Speaking of Louis Picamoles, oh my word, it looks like he's coming to the Premiership.
Well, I'm not getting...
Quadzilla.
I'm not getting too excited yet because he'll just break my heart.
Oh, Louis.
So the rumours of signings by Premiership clubs has been ridiculous this week. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Talupe Faletau to Bath one, that seems to be warming up again.
Yeah,
is it?
Well, Dragons have spoken to the WRU to say, we want to sell him. We want to get rid of him.
I think it cost $150,000 for Bath to purchase.
They want the money. Yeah.
They need the money and all the rest of it.
Now, the problem with Wales is Gatland is tied to this player quota of players playing abroad, isn't he?
Oh, it's Gatland's law. He'll work it out. Interesting. So that could happen again.
That's possibly on, yeah.
And so let's talk about the other rumours. Picamoles. Now, initially the rumour was to Bath, but Northampton or Leicester looks like the loudest rumours there with Louis Picamoles.
Which back row would he look best in? Do you know what I mean? Like, which is the sexiest back row? Not in terms of looks, just like name and brand value. Because Burgess, Picamoles and Lowe beating.
God. Wow.
Yeah. It really does. That's right up there with like Fernandez, like, Lobby, Gorgotter and Armitage.
And you've got the best of France, you've got the best of South Africa, and you've got the best of Australian Rugby League all in one back row.
So, I spoke to someone who knows a thing or two. I spoke to someone who knows someone. And
it's very
cryptic.
Yeah.
It wasn't my brother.
Okay,
it wasn't him.
Because automatically you two will think it's him, but it wasn't. But so I heard Leicester Tigers, they've got a lot of signings still to announce. Okay. A bunch from the NPC competition in New Zealand.
No point coming, right, that one. Okay.
That Aaron Major will be, have an influence on coming over. And they've got two players. I mean, they've got a Tongan player and someone else that are being announced at the moment. But they've got two players still involved in the World Cup. So involved in the World Cup semi-final level, who they haven't yet announced. And subsequent to us sort of breaking that little rumour on Twitter earlier this week, a rumour started to surface about Jean de Villiers going to Leicester Tigers.
And do you know what? That would make perfect sense. I'll tell you why. It's something I've said in the past, which is Leicester tend to prioritise certain positions. And backs don't seem to be one of those positions unless it's the inside centre berth. So you look at who they've had, Pat Howard, Gibson, what's his name? The other Australian...
What was the name of the Fijian...
Bowden's another. I'm trying to think.
Rambeni.
Oh yeah, Rambeni.
Herbert. Well, not Herbert. Who was it?
Will Greenwood.
Kafer, sorry.
Rod Kafer.
Yes.
Yeah, they've had loads of them.
Will Greenwood.
Yeah.
For five seasons.
So they seem to like expensive inside centres because I think they see it as
losing Anthony Allen and only having 37-year-old Suramai Bai. They could do with an inside centre.
Yeah,
and imagine De Villiers to Elangi later this season.
A lot later this season.
Day maybe. They'll never play together. I've understood it to be this, which is Jean De Villiers this year. And is there an Olympics next year? Or is it year after?
There is 2016.
Olympics in the summer, 2016 in Brazil.
Right, so then Sonny Bill after the Olympics.
After this season, so that'll be for next season. So
how old's Sonny Bill then? He's going to be in his 30s.
He's 30 now.
I'd still take a 32-year-old or 31-year-old Sonny Bill.
So let's start the rumour mill. Let's assume this rumour is true. Leicester Tigers have two players involved in the World Cup semi-finals that they haven't yet announced.
Yeah.
Let's say Jean de Villiers is one. Who would you pick as the other? There's a realistic target, because we know a lot of players' destination is already set.
Okay, well, let's also just say this. I have no idea about any of the contracts of any of the players at the moment. I have literally zero ideas. So we're going to have to look at older players, I guess.
Yeah.
Kano might be one.
I think New Zealand back row is where I'd go.
Mm.
Kano.
Richie.
Potentially.
Richie to Leicester.
As far as I'm aware, he's not signed for anyone. I'm pretty certain about that. I don't think he's formalised his retirement post-World Cup. They've just lost their open side flanker. The guy they got in to replace him was from London Welsh, Lachlan McCaffrey.
They could do with a bit of class in their back row.
Yeah,
agree.
I think McCaw could be a very good fit.
I think Kano would be the one.
Kano would also be a good fit.
And he did. Go on, sorry.
No, I was going to say, if you talk about Leicester spend their money in certain positions, Kronfeld.
Yep. Back.
Moody.
Salvi.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And they've spent God knows how much money on Croft. He doesn't even play.
Yeah, he played on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. Is he aiming for the next Lions? He must be, mustn't he?
He's timed this all wrong. He's come back to fitness just after a World Cup.
Bitten by his own snake.
Ben Smith. How old's Ben Smith?
He looks much older
Ben
than
Smith.
I think he is.
He's younger. He's 20. He's not that old.
He looks old. In real life, he looks
old. I'd say
old.
24, 25. Ben Smith. And
Ben Smith. Ice hockey?
Sorry?
Ben Smith, ice hockey player.
I think it's a different one.
He's 27.
Oh, good. I was wondering about that as well. that's ticked off. That's the next point on the
Tell
podcast.
Tell me the age of Alex Ovechkin.
Benjamin Robert Smith, 1st of June 1986, 29 years old.
Really?
So I think it might be a good move for him to...
Right, can I just say something? We can't say, oh, really, anymore. Because you've just done it, and I've done it before. And in my rugby club, I'm getting absolutely destroyed for saying, oh, really? Apparently, we say it all the time.
Do we? Is it when we're not quite listening to one of the other people?
Oh, really?
Agreed. That's another thing we say all the time.
Agreed.
It's right. Mainly you two just back and forward.
I concur.
Spot on. Okay, fine.
Do you want to talk about the Premiership?
Yeah,
do I?
Oh, my word, do I.
So, shall we start then with Gloucester versus Saracens?
Well, this is the season for Gloucester, isn't it? This is the year.
This is their year.
They are currently undefeated this season.
And I imagine they'll stay undefeated the entire season.
Most of it, I would have
All
thought.
All of it, definitely.
Oh, I'm going to crack open the Big D Nuts.
That's right.
For the Premiership review. We've been fueled by Big D Nuts all the way through the World Cup. Do you want to put some Big D Nuts, Jeff?
Stop saying Big D. How much are you getting paid for this, Tim?
We're not getting anything for this.
Apart from some Big D Nuts. Some delicious...
It would seem...
The D stands for delicious, Phil.
It would seem that both teams are back to full strength. Something very interesting, which might be a
Calamophony in the row. Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Sione Calamophony into second row.
So him and Savage in the row. But here's a real interesting selection. Saracens are playing Owen Farrell at 12. Now, I know this isn't particularly new for Saracens, but I just wonder going forward if there's been a little bit of a meeting. Owen knows that Dad isn't much longer for the England setup, and now he needs to find a position where he can actually get in alongside Ford. And by the way, I think he's a cracking 12. That's the other thing.
I really, that could be the way going forward. We've said it many times.
Mm.
If only Stuart Lancaster was one of those people who would listen to the podcast.
I'm glad he hasn't, because he seems like a really nice guy, and I don't think I want him listening to what
JB might break him.
So which way are we going? Gloucester at home?
Sarries.
I would go Sarries away.
Who's Michael Rhodes? Any idea?
South African. I think he came from the Stormers.
And also, the Saracens are playing the best worst player in the world, if that makes sense. Or the best player who isn't very good in the world.
Doesn't make a lot of sense. What? So the best not very good player?
Yeah, Jackson Ray, who I don't rate, but every time he plays, he scores a hat-trick or something, and then you don't see it, they wrap him up and send him away for...
He started at 8 last week, didn't he?
He's starting at 8 again.
Is he starting at 8 again? Wow.
Okay, next match on Friday is the Sale game. Sale look very much like Sale. They've got pretty much the full team out.
And they looked rubbish away from home.
Yeah, but they always look
just
rubbish
like
away
Sale.
From home.
Yeah,
I saw Peter Stringer in the gym.
Did you?
So I would have thought that. Well, in fact, I know that professional rugby sides have their own gyms, and I know Sale Sharks have a very, very well equipped gym. Peter Stringer was walking into a Pure gym.
That's weird.
Which one? Oh, the one by Exchange.
The one that we sometimes frequent, Jay, yeah.
Interesting.
So I was just at the water fountain, just, you know, having really busted a gut and worked to maximal intensity. And, and Peter Stringer walked in, and I just said, I just introduced myself, said, oh, hi, Pete. Welcome to Manchester. You know, weekend looked a bit ugly.
Did he say he's a massive fan of the podcast, or...?
It was implied. It wasn't explicit.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
He didn't need to say it. It's just a look, isn't it? And you know,
it is a look. I see it all the time.
So I'm just wondering maybe if Sale Sharks gym isn't equipped with dumbbells big enough for Peter Stringer, perhaps.
What was he doing just out of interest?
I didn't actually stick around. I'd kind of finished, and he was just.
You didn't
started.
Ask him if he could spot his weights for him.
But I did have that awkward moment where, so I sort of said downstairs on the floor of the gym, I'd sort of said, oh, you know, welcome to Manchester, hi Peter, blah blah blah. Then I went up to get changed.
I know.
And then he came into the changing room and we were near each other. It was just felt awkward. Yeah. It's like saying goodbye to someone twice, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Or shaking hands at the end of the meeting, and then when they're leaving again, like, do you shake hands again? Oh, no.
One half goes for it, one half doesn't go for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, stop yeah. it!
But no, they didn't have a good day at the office at Saracens.
Now, talking about Peter Stringer and Sale, how are they going to manage having both these guys? Because they've got Cusseter there, who they've spent significant money on. And yep. now they've got Stringer, and he mustn't be coming cheap because he's come off a great season at Bath.
And they've got a very, very promising young guy coming through their academy, James someone, I forget.
That's just what I was going to ask.
James Flynn?
No, he's a prop. He's a prop, yeah. As you well know.
Sorry, that isn't a joke. James Flynn is on the bench for Sale.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Played a few games with him a couple of seasons ago, essentially.
Oh, and is he a prop, is he?
He is.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. They've also got Brian Mujolsi on the bench.
Oh, really?
Who got penalised off the park against Saracens, yeah. Massive, massive guns. Still giving away penalties.
Too much bench press.
Has he got better guns than Tommy Taylor?
He's probably got the best guns in the Premiership.
He has Brian Mujolsi. Yeah.
Wow. So, Worcester versus Sale then. Sale at home. I think Sale as well. But I'm not going to complete. No, I am going to discount Worcester. Sale. We've got Bath Wasps. I've got no teams announced for Bath versus Wasps.
Oh my God! Yeah, but who cares? Because we have got the potential of James Haskell and Sam Burgess wearing six. And you know, if you're on that, if we pick up on RefCam, you know exactly what we're going to hear. Take it away, Hask and Sam.
Absolute banter flying around already, lads.
Exactly.
Hask and Cowhead.
I wonder if Haskell's going to regret this. Like, you know, messing around with Burgess.
Chloe Maidley.
Yeah, Chloe Maidley. Messing around with Sam Burgess is a little bit like messing around with your pet tiger. You're in control until such time that you're not. And
until that tiger's hungry.
Yeah. Until you're on opposite sides of a scrum, and then you might have some problems. It's going to be a fascinating battle, and if Wasps want to be considered serious contenders, they have to win this. At home, they've got to win pretty much everything.
Yes, oh, definitely. And we both back them against Harlequins. I know Tim was in the know. He knows better than we do.
Yeah, but, how do you know that?
I know things.
I was expecting Wasps to do big things this season, and they've really got to. They've got to win every home game, like you say. Mm. This will be very interesting.
Apparently they're expecting over 20,000 for this.
Wow.
Who knew Coventry was such a hotbed of rugby? So there'll be Haskell will be available. Joe Launchbury will also be available. So it looks like they've both got full teams out. I fancy...
Bath didn't play last week. Bath looked a bit rusty.
They did look rusty.
They only just sneaked past.
I think a lot of people seem to be saying Exeter are going to be a nailed on top four side this year.
Yeah, Austin Healy had them in his top four.
He had them top two and then downgraded them to top four.
In the bus, was it not?
No, just in general. but no, a lot of people. And Mike Ford, following on from the Bath game, said Exeter will be a top four team this year. So we're glad to have come away with a win, most of all.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if I agree with that. I don't think Exeter will make top four. I think Wasps, I think Bath, Surrey's,
Maybe. That next group, though, is so tight.
They've recruited well. And what I would say is guys like Sam Hill, Henry Slade, Jack Noel are that little bit older now. They were this time last year, we were going, oh, they're all really young, aren't they?
Do you know what? I always look back at the old Newcastle teams and go, oh, we've got all these young guys and they'll just get better every year, and they never got any better. Other than Johnny Wilkinson, they were left with May, Noon, Stevens, Flood, and they didn't get any better. They just stayed constantly bad. So... I would just temper that opinion. I really don't know. Wasps at home. I still think Bath edge it.
I'm going to go for Wasps.
Oh, I think Wasps, I'm going to go Wasps. Wasps by 5.
Wasps by less than 5 for me.
We've got Tigers versus Harlequins at Welford Road. Now, I have no teams available. But if Leicester put out anything like they did last week,
they did all right against London Irish. They did well. Tommy Bell had a really good game, and we were going Sam Harrison and Tommy Bell halfbacks. That just didn't sound right. But
yeah,
they did well.
But as long as their platform's good, which you know it will be, Leicester at home should have enough.
Yeah.
Now Quinn should have most of their England boys were on the bench last week. Easter, Marla, Brown.
And they still won.
They should be starting now. Kerr had a back spasm.
Yeah, I know you're going to shoot me down off this. You did last week, but I still think the argument is valid. I don't think having your England players back so soon is actually an advantage, because I think they've had such a hard summer building up to something and they're having such a massive letdown. They're not going to be quite 100%.
Leicester or Quins then, Jay?
Well, Leicester at home, you'd be a fool to bet against Leicester at home, but I am a fool, so I think I'm going to go based on last week, but I don't know. Quins, I think.
Leicester at home.
I need to look at the team sheet. We don't have teams out for this, but the second to last game is Exeter Chiefs London Irish.
Chiefs
comfortably.
And final game,
Northampton versus the almighty Newcastle at the Gardens.
Northampton to right the wrongs of last week and put up a big score at home.
If last week's results were anything to go by, Newcastle will be massively over-egged, and Northampton are going to want some sort of revenge back at home. So Northampton for me. In fact, Northampton's going to massively overpower them.
Agreed.
Oh, really? Right, I think that's just about it for the Premiership. Do you want to talk about Pro 12?
Love to.
I don't, so I'll let you do it.
We're going to make a brew. Let's go make a brew and leave Phil talking Pro 12.
Yeah.
Ulster
will be getting their third win of the season at home on Friday night to Cardiff Blues.
Yep, that's not hard to see.
Yeah, I see that.
Other Friday night fixtures. Scarlets host Munster. Munster probably won't have many of their Irish players back.
That would be weird.
So Scarlets possibly to win at home.
DTH to score a hat trick after his brace this weekend.
Did he get a brace this weekend as well? Bloody hell!
Oh, hang on, as well.
As well as all the ones in the
World
right,
Cup. Yeah, yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
He's on some form, DTH. Newport Gwent Dragons host the mighty power from across the narrow sea. A long way across the narrow sea, Benetton Treviso.
Yes,
a different narrow sea.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you who's going to play in that game. I don't know any of the players. I don't know who's going to win.
And a repeat of the final 2 years ago, Leinster host Glasgow, which could be a very interesting game.
Yeah, it might be, actually. I mean, I don't think the Scottish players will be back yet.
I wouldn't.
Or the Irish
so.
Players, actually.
Well, they're all injured, aren't they, the Irish players?
Yeah, that's true. I can't call that. Phil, you're the expert.
Back the home team.
Done.
Leinster at home.
Exciting. I am going to get into a bit of Pro 12.
Are you?
Well, I need to, because my next secondment for BT is going to be Northampton Llanelli Scarlets.
Oh, you got a Heineken Cup game.
So I've got to watch a bit of Scarlets.
Nice.
So I need to swat up, guys. So
I've told you this.
Let's get on to this Pro 12 thing.
I've told you before, but the best way to swat up about any sport is to buy the computer game.
So I did that. I called JB because there was a bit of work around NFL, and I'm pretty good on NFL. But I said, JB, is there any little shortcut, any podcast I should listen to? And he went, buy Madden. just buy Madden and play Madden. I did. It's good. Right. Well, here's one thing, okay? But something lighthearted to finish with. So I don't know whether you've seen this, but footballer Sebastian Schweinsteiger, the German midfielder. His management team are putting into the hands of German lawyers a case to have his image removed from a doll. So basically, there's a figure, an action figure of a World War II German soldier that bears a more than striking resemblance to footballer Sebastian Schweinsteiger.
The package of the doll even says Bastion on it.
No, it doesn't.
It does. It does.
Oh, wow. Well, there's no coming back from this. And I thought it's just a coincidence. A very funny.
So, but let's put to one side the nature of the soldier and the war, blah blah blah.
Danny, can I have a World War II logistics soldier, please?
Yeah, you
from the Axis powers. Watson?
A little bit concerned. But if you were gonna make a doll to represent other rugby nationalities, mm-hmm. which player would fit the bill perfectly?
Very good.
No, it doesn't have to be an Englishman being the English doll. If you think there's someone else in world rugby that looks so English.
Yeah,
generally speaking, I imagine it would come from your own nation. So which player would represent and looks more that nationality than anyone else?
Okay. So, I mean, problem is, the most caricature team in the world of the nation they come from is Ireland. There is no mistaking the Irish players, except for maybe Jared Payne,
as being... Because he's a Kiwi.
Yeah, because he's a chiseled jaw Kiwi. They're all kind of... They all look very Irish. Omani is the
Farmer's
most Irish.
Farmer's arms.
Yeah, Omani with his like normal everyday frame, but his immense farmer strength is just... He's so Irish.
Paddy Jackson is... categorically the most Irish man.
He's an actual leprechaun.
He's a real life leprechaun.
He is literally a leprechaun. Leprechaun.
He invented Lucky Charms, a cereal.
Sorry, on the literally thing, Steve Hansen has said that South Africa will want to literally rip our heads off in Saturday's World Cup semi-final.
That's a real difficult thing to do.
Do you think World Rugby will release a statement if that occurs?
I've told you about the time I saw someone's head come off Jim Ridley, yeah?
You have told me.
Well, for the benefit of those who haven't heard this story, have you heard this?
Oh, is it the scrum cap?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I've ruined the punchline.
You ruined it!
Oh, no, anyway. Let's stick to this task. We can save that for another day.
Okay, yeah. I'll save it for next. In 6 months' time, I'll tell you all the story about when someone's head came off.
Or JB's is available as an after-dinner speaker, if you like. You can tell it there. So, come on then. We've got Paddy Jackson.
So, last year, I think I told you, I ate in a Georgian restaurant.
No, you did not tell me this.
Did I not tell you that?
Oh, I remember talking about this.
A Georgian restaurant. It was when I was living in Islington.
Oh, right, okay.
Georgian restaurant called Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
It was good food, actually. Very nice. But the waitress who served me, the Georgian waitress, looked very much like a rugby player.
Oh, wow.
Not a Georgian rugby player. She looked like Augustine Creevy. She was the absolute double of Augustine Creevy.
Wow. You're a real charmer. On the way out, you say, do you know Augustine Creevy? Look him up.
Right, so Wales... I don't know. Let's think.
I know one. But the thing is about Wales, I mean, okay, so basically you've got the Welsh people, like the guys in the hinterland who round up sheep for a living. And then you've got the people from the valleys who are a little bit uncouth.
Alex Cuthbert looks like a guy out in Swansea.
I'm glad you said that, because that's exactly the look I was going for when I came up with Liam Williams.
I thought you were going to say you had a night out in Swansea and you were going for the kind of skinny legs, big up body, high and tight hair.
Hi, ladies. Hi. Skip leg day. No, Liam Williams is the ultimate valley boy.
Yeah, he is. Definitely.
All right, we'll go with that one.
And as for England, the problem with England is it's a very varied sort of country.
France.
Ouge.
Definitely.
But Picamoles is very French.
Or Zarzewski.
Oh, yeah.
as a Parisian man strolling round, drinking fine coffee, fine red wine.
Yeah. Parise looks like he should be made into a statue and put in Florence somewhere, so he could do for Italy.
Definitely should do. Scotland?
I've got it. Duncan Weir. No one looks more Scottish. You can imagine him in a couple of years' time, you know, wakes up at 11, goes to the pub, stays in the pub, goes home about 11. Yeah, about 35. Diet of processed white food. He's definitely
the most Scottish people. Scottish listeners. We really value you listening.
Well, the rest of them are South African anyway, so it's not just Finn Russell is a little bit Scottish, but not as much as Duncan Weir.
Chavvy Scottish.
Yeah.
Alan Jacobson is the epitome of a Scottish man.
Oh, that's a great shout.
Like a Highlander or something. A big, big kind of
big, heavy, stocky, heavy set.
Yeah.
Borderline obese. Borderline morbidly obese.
Yeah, likes his... anyway, let's not get into
the England conundrum then. The England conundrum. Who's most English? I think English rugby, it would have to be... Who would be James Bond out of the England rugby squad?
I'm not sure they even have a James Bond at the moment. Who would be...
If it comes back to the leaders thing. Andy Farrell as James Bond. But he's not the most English man.
No, see, the most Yorkshire man on there, you can, you know, Sam Burgess. You know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. So who's the most public schoolboy on there?
Oh, there's a few.
I mean, Rob Shaw's very public schoolboy.
Launchbury has that public schoolboy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he really does.
It is Launchbury.
Yeah.
It is Launchbury.
Yeah.
But blatantly a prefect.
You can imagine him in one of those cotton rugby shirts, or maybe even two of them.
Blatantly a prefect at school.
Who's the most South African man?
Who looks like they eat meat the most?
Scott Spedding?
Rory Cockott?
W.P. Nell? Or Josh Strauss, perhaps? Maybe Brad Barrett? God, maybe Rickard Strauss?
They get everywhere, don't they?
DTA van der Merwe?
Yes, another one. Have we got any at the moment in Wales? Ian Evans, but he didn't play.
Yeah.
I think he's in Barbian.
Hmm.
So, and as for South Africans... Etzebeth. I mean, I know not everyone in South Africa looks like him, but he just epitomises.
Like someone who just only eats protein.
Yeah.
Scalcor, like for the blonde hair thing, Scalcor, Jean de Villiers, has to be.
I did like, who's the hooker whenever he comes on?
Adrian Strauss.
Adrian Strauss. There's always some banter about... Oh, South Africa subbed on Boris Johnson after knocking over that Japanese school kid.
He's got that kind of like, he's got quite a funny look about him. But I bet if you were like in his age group in rugby or school, he was no joke whatsoever. He looks like a very serious, very, very nice. I mean, he's probably an absolute lovely man. But I can imagine him battering me. I can imagine him battering me.
Exactly. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see you two go head to head.
I wouldn't.
I don't know.
Quade Cooper's the most Australian. I'll settle that for you right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And actually, probably Richie McCaw is the most most New Zealand. Honest, hardworking, likes farming.
At Rugby Podcast, get in touch with us and tell us who would be the perfect rugby model for a doll. Or who represents that nation perfectly? We've got the Joe Launchbury. I want him to have glasses.
Who would be? by the way, the worst doll would be Hammersley from Newcastle. That'd be the least inspiring doll that I've ever seen.
Did you see the?
He's a great try.
The hit he put in. Or
no.
He bounced off
the hammer.
The hammer.
Oh, we'll give him a new name.
The hammer. The hammer Hammersley.
School prefect 11 stone wet Hammersley.
Bounced off. I think it's Henry Purdy. And it took the ball, took a high ball, man and ball, and Purdy flew in and just bounced off him.
Yeah, I've got a sneaky feeling he might be quite good, you know.
Yeah.
Because I've got a theory about players that don't look like they should be good and they're where they are, those are the guys that you've got to watch because they're actually talented.
Well, we were saying that about Kieran Reid a year or two ago.
Conrad Smith.
But mind you, when you shake Kieran Reid's hand, like I have, you realise that he's basically got shovels for hands.
You were too afraid to touch him, weren't you?
I was. I couldn't get near him. It's the aura.
Conrad Smith is a good one for New Zealand. Looks like he's kind of 30 years out of date, but is just unbelievable. Just incredible.
Are you saying that New Zealand, the New Zealand society is about 30 years out of date? Because I would agree with you.
He could wear... No, Conrad Smith would... Yeah, you're right. Conrad Smith would... You know, you see the old pictures of the original 87 World Cup when they had that Canterbury kit with the... They had that sort of funny collar that Canterbury used to do that was really like the white V. It was like flat. It wasn't like a folded, like one on top of the other collar.
Like a really open V.
Like really open V.
Yes.
Those old shirts. Conrad Smith looks like he would just tell us, Tim, look at home in that.
Have you had another Canterbury stash drop?
No, I'm still wearing the old stash I got from Canterbury.
Oh, they look rather nice.
Yeah.
They are very nice, Tim. Suspiciously nice.
Anyway, at Rugby Podcast, tell us what you think, and we'll revisit that one on the next podcast.
Indeed.
I think we're done, boys.
Oh, really?
I think we're done. We will reconvene after the Rugby World Cup semi-finals and after the Premiership and that big face-off between Big Sam and Hask.
Absolute.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fans are flying around already. Lads.
Nice one, JB.
Nice one, Tim.
Nice one, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
In a bit.